Welcome to The Drum Shuffle, a podcast offering insights, perspectives, and conversations for drummers. I'm your host, Jamie Eads.
Hey, how's it going out there, everybody? Welcome to the Drum Shuffle. Jamie Eads joining you as I do each and every week. This is episode 125. I hope everybody's having a great week out there. I inadvertently misled you there in my intro. I said, as I join you each and every week, and if you guys are following along, you know that is not true. Lots of stuff going on, and I apologize for the tardiness of getting this episode out to you. We missed last week, but I hope to get on a more regular schedule as my schedule allows, if that makes any sense. Guys and girls, we have a fantastic guest this week. I know you're going to get a lot out of this interview. A great friend to the Drum Shuffle podcast. I'm going to be joined by Stefano Ashbridge right after this message from our sponsor, Los Cabos Drumsticks.
The best kept secret for drummers is finally out. Los Cabos Drumsticks may look like the sticks you grew up with, but these are not your father's drumsticks. Los Cabos Drumsticks is Canada's number one drumstick brand, and they are coming to a retailer near you. With operations in over 28 countries worldwide, thousands of drummers have already discovered the Los Cabos difference. Using FSC certified wood from Canada and the US, Los Cabos make the finest quality drumsticks, percussion tools, and accessories on the market. The best news, Los Cabos Drumsticks offers you a ton of choice. They have 22 individual drumstick models and 14 percussion tools, many of which are available in three different wood types: maple, white hickory, and red hickory. Red hickory comes from the center or heart of the hickory tree and has been independently proven to be both stronger and more elastic than white hickory without adding a lot of weight. While most drumstick manufacturers have shunned red hickory, Los Cabos Drumsticks has embraced it, becoming the only established stick brand in the world to offer a full line of red hickory drumsticks. To learn more about Los Cabos Drumsticks, visit them online at loscabosdrumsticks.com, follow them on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and don't forget to ask for Los Cabos Drumsticks at your favorite retailer. Dare to be different. Join the Red Hickory Revolution with Los Cabos Drumsticks.
All right, guys and girls, as I mentioned, we're going to be joined by Stefano Ashbridge. Stefano and I go back, I want to say well over a year. Stefano is one of those listeners of the show that reached out, and we have had some email conversations back and forth. And Stefano founded drumlessonsinla.com. And in checking him out, he has a very high-level teaching practice, just a superb drummer, and a great guy. And we have gotten to know one another pretty well. And I said, you know, let's find a time to get you on the Drum Shuffle, because I wanted to shed some light on his teaching practice in Los Angeles. It's very high-level. And Stefano is one of those guys that is just really trying to teach young drummers how to be great drummers. And that is the most enviable of pursuits, in my opinion. And I know you're going to get a lot out of this great conversation that we had. So please help me welcome to the Drum Shuffle, Stefano Ashbridge. Stefano, how are you, brother?
Doing great, Jamie. How are you?
Man, doing well. Thanks so much for taking time to come on the Drum Shuffle. We really appreciate it. I want you to indulge me. Tell me what the weather's like in LA right now.
Oh, man, it's perfect for me. Anyway, man, the winters in LA are the best.
I know.
Perfect time of year, not too hot, not too cold. Yeah, can't complain.
Well, the reason I ask, we're in the midst of a blizzard here in central Kentucky. So we're supposed to get like a foot of snow today. So I just wanted to hear some good weather news from out west.
Nice. I'll send some sunny thoughts your way.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. You know, I've jokingly said on this show a million times, if I could have LA weather and Central Kentucky traffic, I'd really be doing something.
That's right. That's both worlds. Right.
Well, cool. Well, man, again, thanks for taking time to come on the show. You know, as is our tradition here on the Drum Shuffle, I know that you were originally born in Italy and you and your folks moved to the States, you know, early on in your life. But talk to us a little bit about, you know, what you can remember of Italy and coming to the States and how you got into drumming, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure. Well, I'll do my best because I'm getting old and my memory is really hazy. But we moved to the States when I was 7, and we moved around a lot, but we finally settled in a small town just north of Salt Lake City called Ogden, which was a great place to grow up. I got my drumming journey. I started a little later in life. I started playing when I was 16. And just a quick story, what happened was, I was one of those kids that I've always wanted to be a drummer. Ever since I can remember, that's all I've ever wanted to do. But my little brother got a guitar for his birthday and decided to start taking guitar lessons. So I figure, all right, you're taking guitar lessons and I'm taking drum lessons. Let's do this.
Okay.
And we booked our first lesson back to back, and I go, or he goes and takes his lesson, and then I went to take my lesson. And for some reason, I'm not sure why, the teacher peers out from behind the wall and just kind of says, well, I'm teaching somebody right now, and just goes back. He didn't say come back in 30 minutes or anything, and I was just left there, just kind of really disappointed. But anyway, I found another teacher, great teacher that I took lessons from years, no worries. But the reason I mention that is because now as a teacher, I remember that feeling, and I never want any of my students to feel that disappointed.
Yeah.
With that. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, so you started out then, you know, with formal training. You know, I mean, personally, you know, I begged my mom until I got a, you know, a drum set and was pretty much self-taught my whole life. So starting out with formal education, I think, kind of changes the trajectory for some folks, certainly. You know, did you participate in like marching band or, you know, jazz band, things like that in school as well?
You know, I didn't. The thing, like you mentioned, I had a great teacher. His name is William Lyons. I want to give a shout out to him because he was amazing. And, you know, he taught me the drums, taught me what I needed to know. And I really just, my goal as a young kid was just to be in a band. And so I practice as much as I could, and I would just play along to my favorite albums all day. So that's what consumed my time. It didn't dawn on me to be in marching band or anything like that. My goals was just, I'm going to start a band. We're going to take over the world. Well,
you know, yeah.
As a little kid there, but, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the way we all were. You know, I mean, ultimately, yeah. the goal is, you know, to be in a group of musicians and perform, right? I mean, isn't that everybody's goal initially?
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
So growing up in Utah, you know, I've visited Utah a few times. And, you know, growing up there, you know, I don't know what the music scene was like for you. And I think we're pretty close in age, but did you start forming garage bands as a young, you know, high school age guy? And is that what, you know, really got you in the path of chasing music as a vocation?
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, even before I started, I think I always had it in my mind, I want to be a drummer. That's all I ever wanted to do. But yeah, definitely in taking lessons, I remember thinking, I just want to practice and get really good before I get into any bands. And fortunately, what happened was in high school, I was in a drama class and they needed some sort of performance thing to grade. And so other people kind of recruited me to play drums for this song, for this drama thing. And then they liked it, and so they wanted to start a band. So my thinking was, I'm just going to sit in a room for years and practice and get good. But luckily, they kind of pushed me out and, you know, just regular high school kids jamming, trying to be in a band. So, yeah, I started playing in bands right away, just either starting some or joining others just locally with kids in the area.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting point. I want to explore that just a little bit because, you know, I was very much the same way, you know, just kind of playing along to my favorite records. You know, I really wanted to get good, right? Or whatever I perceived as getting good. But word gets out, you know, I mean, I grew up in a fairly small town, and there weren't a lot of drummers around. So, you know, all these, you know, young guys and girls that are playing guitar or bass or keyboards or whatever, they start hearing about, oh, there's this kid that really knows how to play drums, and people start showing up. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know if it's that way everywhere, but that was the way it went for me is, you know, I was kind of locked away in the basement practicing, and people were like, hey man, we should start a band. And, you know, you don't have any hope at that point because you're going to be in a band, right? You know, so, well, cool. So, you know, I don't know how long you hung around, you know, in Ogden and the Salt Lake City scene, but I know at some point you made the decision to move to LA. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, making that decision.
Sure. Well, yeah, I stuck around for a bit, just kind of grew up there. But I just, at some point, I just wanted, like I said, wanted to be a professional drummer of some sort. And I just thought, okay, the music centers is where to go. I thought of New York or L.A. or Nashville. I even thought of Austin. And really, L.A. was just close enough to Utah. And I visited there and just buckled down and decided, I'm moving to L.A. And I tried to save up as much money as I could and just made my way down there. Found a place to live and batch down and, you know, just start playing with as many people as I could. The odd thing was, as soon as I moved to L.A. and started to audition, the first gig I got was a for-hire gig, meaning the artist wasn't looking for someone to join their band. They're just looking for musicians to play live with. And so it was a paid-for-hire type situation. And my first thought was, I can dig this. You know, it's like I'm getting paid to play the drums and none of the hassles and headaches of fighting with your bandmates. You know, it's okay, I could do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I kind of went down that route in LA, playing with different artists and different bands and just anyone who needed a drummer, putting myself out there. And, you know, looking back, it was a great time just to get to know the LA scene and play all the clubs. Yeah, just good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Well, how old were you when you made the move to LA? I mean, you were a fairly young guy, I'm assuming, you know.
Yeah, I was 25.
Okay.
Which is kind of, you know, for the business, the entertainment business is kind of right on the cusp of getting old. But, you know, still young enough or young enough looking where I could play with a variety of bands, I guess.
Yeah.
In LA.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but just to think that 25 is on the cusp of being too old, I mean, that's nuts, you know?
Right. Yeah, it totally is. And I remember seeing ads for drummers that would state that, you know, no one older than 26 or something like that. And I thought, oh, man, should have moved here 10 years ago. But
yeah, no doubt.
But really, there's a place for everybody. It's, you know, I totally understand if you have a teenage band, they're not going to want middle-aged person playing.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe yeah. Middle-aged now, but there's still work out there for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get me started on that. I played a gig once, and, you know, I will just say this, you know, I went gray early. You know, I had gray hair as a, you know, 22-year-old, 23-year-old. And I remember being told, you know, hey, man, you know, you play really well, but if you could dye your hair, that would be really cool. And I was just like, yeah, fuck this. I don't want any part of that gig. So, you know, but anyway, I digress. I'm sorry. This is, you know, it's just interesting to me.
I know that you played, you know, we were talking before, you played some gigs with like some Hollywood elite types when you first got to LA. Talk to me about that.
Well, yeah, it was great. I figure, I guess only in LA I'm here, and I just, my two philosophies were be as good as you can be, show up prepared, and then don't be a jerk. So I think with those two things, putting myself out there, like you mentioned, the word spreads, and one gig leads to another. And I started playing for some actors or some actors' children who had bands, and through connections that I had, I was started to get hired doing that. So it was a lot of fun, great people. I played with Peter Gallagher's daughter, Catherine Gallagher. I played with Anthony Hopkins' daughter, Abigail Hopkins.
Wow.
Who else? I played with Alan Richson, who's an actor. And like I said, I'm old now, so I have to go back through my memory and remember all these gigs. But yeah, it was just a great time. Like I said, at the time, I remember thinking, you know, at some point I'm going to be too old to play with, you know, 15-year-olds or 20-year-olds. But at the time, I fit the description, and it was just fun to be in L.A. and do that type of gig.
I gotcha. That's interesting. And, you know, I think good or bad, right? And we talk about this with all of our guests on this show. It's like once you have, you know, what I call a name brand gig, it opens up doors for other name brand gigs. I mean, did you find that to be a thing?
Definitely. You get the question, who have you played for? Or even from non-musicians, have you played with anyone that I would have heard of?
Yeah.
And it definitely helps. It kind of can get your foot in the door just to have that on your resume, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, once you've played with somebody that is recognized and, you know, you didn't blow that gig up, right? It's like there's a level of trust on that next audition. You know, if you go in and say, yeah, I played with Elton John, everybody's like, well, you're good enough, right? I mean,
right. Exactly.
So, well, that's pretty cool, man. You know, you're in LA, you're doing all these different gigs. At what point did you decide that you wanted to focus more on education and giving lessons and being a teacher? Was that, you know, did that happen organically over time, or was it, you know, you just decided one day, this is what I really want to do?
Well, I remember the year. There was a clear exclamation. It was 2008. But leading up to that, what it was is, I mentioned I started taking lessons back in Utah, and what got me teaching is my teacher, after about 5 years or so of taking lessons with him, I think he saw that I was serious and I took it seriously, and so he would ask me to fill in for him when he wasn't available. And so that introduced me to teaching. And at a young age, I saw that my drumming journey would also include teaching. You know, I took it seriously and, you know, just loved sharing that part of my life, which is important to me, with students. And so I've always taught. And moving to LA, same thing. I had students, but it coincided with me playing and doing recording work. And I also started doing some tech work for people. And then I started getting tours. So I started touring on and off. And at some point, again, maybe it's that age thing, I was starting to get a little older, but I just started to see, I started to focus, what do you want to do with this drumming stuff? I would notice I'd go on tour, and then all the work at home would kind of dry up, and I'd come home and build it back up. And same thing with my students. You know, I remember my first tour when I got it, I was afraid that my students would quit because I'm going on tour. And this was a while ago. Nowadays, with technology, it's no problem. You can still do a lesson in a hotel room or whatnot. But back then, I was afraid, okay, I'm going to leave for a tour. What about my students? But they stuck with me. But I remember thinking, you know, kind of they're losing the momentum of having regular weekly lessons if I'm gone for a month or two.
Yeah.
So, you know, after a while, I just started to to focus. I felt like I was kind of spinning my wheels a little bit with doing all these things. And I decided to stop touring in 2008. And so that would leave me time to really focus on things at home, when one of them being teaching. And I could, you know, spend the proper time to grow a teaching studio, teaching business, and really devote my time to that.
Yeah. Well, obviously you've built it into something that's pretty amazing, you know, and I want to go ahead and get a plug in here. You know, you run drumlessonsinla.com. That is kind of your, web identity. And it's a great, you know, not just a website, but a great community kind of, you know, focus at your site. You know, you have a blog, you have all these different things. And, you know, I think it's pretty amazing what you've built over the years. Did you have any reservations given that, hey, you know, I'm headquartered in Los Angeles. If somebody really wants to, they can go pay the money and find a lesson with Jim Keltner or, you know, Russ Kunkel or, you know what I mean? The list goes on in Los Angeles. Did you have any reservations about that?
That's a great point, because that's exactly right. I mean, myself, when I moved to L.A., I took lessons from some of these well-known players because they live here. Why not?
Right.
You know, it's amazing. But one of the things that I thought of, and one of the things that I tell my students, you know, as drummers, we encounter the imposter syndrome with even as players, where when are you going to get found out, or that you don't belong here? And as a teacher, part of what helped with that, because you're exactly right. I mean, Zorro lives here. Thomas Lang lives here. You know, it's they're all here. Dave Weckl, I think he recently moved, but he used to live here. So my thinking was to examine, and what I tell my students is to really be honest with yourself about where your strengths and weaknesses lie. So that that helps with the imposter syndrome. And so I did that with me as a teacher, and having the experience of teaching, and at this point having taught hundreds of drummers and kept in touch with them to see how I've helped them along, it gave me the confidence to say that, okay, I have something to offer, and so do these other teachers, and we're all in the same boat, and I might not have the name, but I have something to offer. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it certainly does. You know, I've always wondered about that. You know, as an example, you know, here's the analogy I'll use. You know, I have the capability and the ability to do remote drum tracking, you know, right here from the Drum Shuffle podcast studio, right? I could set up a kit and, you know, do remote drum tracks for folks. But I always come back to, you know, somebody can call up Nate Morton from The Voice and have him do this. Somebody can call up, you know, like you said, Thomas Lang or Blair Senta or these guys that are just monster players, Thomas Lang. All those guys do it. Who do I think I am to offer that service as well? Does that make sense?
Sure. And to that, I would say, you know, you're Jamie Eat, and you have something to offer that they don't. And if the other guys have a name, then just from that alone, you know, someone might think, we got to get the drummer who played on this recording to play. But if you, a lot of the things I get is through networking and connection.
Sure.
I don't mean networking in a sleazy way, but going back to the story I told about playing with actors and actors' kids, a lot of that came through connections with people I played with in a band years earlier, who eventually, one of the people became the musical director for those gigs. And so they called me, remembering that we were in a band together years ago. And, you know, that's direct link to getting that gig.
Sure.
And so even with teaching, it's the same thing. If you, one of the things that I'm still working on is learning how to promote and advertise and run a business of teaching so that it's not just, you know, it's putting yourself out there and getting people to see what you have to offer and so that they know who you are and make the decision to want to work with you. I guess what I'm trying to say is, well, for your example that you gave, there are some people for whom you'd be a better fit for their project than Nate Morton, and you just have to put out what you have to offer and make people know who you are, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No. It makes perfect sense, you know, but I think it's a personal barrier of mine when I say, who do I think I am? You know, all these other guys are doing the same thing. So, I mean, I think there's a confidence aspect in there, you know, and I agree there's probably something that I could do better than Thomas Lang, you know. I mean, if you want me to do your drum tracks, you're not going to get a lot of chops, you know. But if you want nothing but chops, Thomas Lang is your guy because he's amazing, you know. So, but I think that's the one thing that a good drum instructor teaches. It's not just the, you know, the paradiddles and rademacues and all that stuff and how to have good time, but it's how to go find a gig that fits you, right? So how do you approach that with your students? Because I'm sure your students come to you and say, hey, you know, I'm at this certain level, I'm ready to go find a professional gig. What are your steps on how to help them find that perfect gig?
Well, one of the things, as you mentioned, each student is different. They all have something different to offer or different backgrounds. So we discuss what their goals are and what they'd like to achieve. And we also set goals and work backwards so that we can measure their progress in terms of reaching that goal.
Yeah.
And so in setting those goals, we discuss of what kind of drummer you want to be, what type of gigs or recording stuff that you might want to do. And as they progress, I try to guide them along to what their preferences are. And especially with a lot of beginners, they just want to play fast and loud. But as they progress and grow, they start to find their voice by examining different styles of music. I try to turn them on to different things for them to see where they would naturally gravitate towards. And through the years, they just happen to find their voice. And we can discuss using your strengths or growing the strengths that you want to become the drummer you want to be, and discuss avenues of how to reach those goals. Like I said, even with myself moving to L.A., discussing what do you want to do with your drumming? Do you want to be a session drummer or, a drummer in a particular band? Or do you want to teach, you know, and or all of the above? And just moving forward to reach those goals specifically.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and you know, I mean, you've been at it long enough. I've been at it long enough. We both recognize how different just the world is now for musicians. And you know, coronavirus be damned, it's still, you know, whether there's a pandemic or not, keeping us from gigs. The world is different. You know, if I come to you and say, hey, I want to be a session player, well, that's a whole lot different today than it was 20 years ago. So, you know, I guess the question ultimately then becomes, how much have you had to adapt as a teacher to understand all of those changes?
Well, I feel that the technology we have available today is very advantageous. I mean, even just with the pandemic, one of the students I was teaching who wants to become perhaps a studio drummer, and he's got recording gear lined up, and that's one of the things that we work on, is having him record in his gear, and we're doing it online through Zoom. And so the technology is already there. For me, having to adapt, the technology has been there to do online remote lessons or even stuff over the web. It's been there before the pandemic, so I had a little bit of experience doing that, teaching students online. I've had some students who are just too far away for them to come to me. And so I feel blessed that when the pandemic hit, because I already had some experience, I was able to basically convert everybody to teaching online. But it did kind of force me to move everything that way. And so the learning curve wasn't that steep in terms of I already knew how to do a Zoom lesson. I think through it all, I've learned how to maybe upgrade certain things so the sound can be a little better. And I'm working on trying to include multiple camera angles that I can switch during the lessons. But before the pandemic hit, I was already pretty familiar with doing things online from a teaching aspect.
Right, gotcha. Well, you know, I mean, I just think, you know, an example I would give, you know, when I first started playing, you know, way back in the late Paleolithic age of, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, you know, there was a lot of work even here, you know, in central Kentucky, which isn't exactly a musical hotbed, but, you know, the radio stations around here would hire a band to do commercial jingles. You know, I mean, that was, you know, kind of steady work if you could get it. Now that doesn't exist. You know, that stuff all comes from a corporate office someplace, you know, royalty free music or whatever. So, I mean, I just think things have changed so much. We all have to adapt to remain employed or employable, I guess would be the proper term. It's just, I know there's a lot of adaptation that has to happen on your end, because when you take on the role of a teacher, not only are you teaching somebody notation and sticking and all of that stuff, but you become a de facto mentor for how to get a job as a musician, right?
Right, exactly.
So, it's more just... than just- There's just challenges around that, right?
Sure, definitely. And going back to what I said earlier, the disappointment I felt and never wanting my students to feel that disappointment. I take what I do seriously in that, like you mentioned, I feel like I'm a mentor or a guide. I'm here to help you move along to reach your goals as a teacher to a student. And so a part of that is not just so that, okay, now you know how to play a paradiddle or play out time. It's what do you want to do with that? And same thing, I have a variety of students. Some of them are serious and want to go to Berkeley or become professional musicians, and others are just adults who want to come home after a hard day's work and play Guns N' Roses. And it's my job to help guide you to where you want to go with that.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, and that's cool. And, you know, that's got to be cool for you. I mean, I'm certainly not a teacher. You know, that's not what I do. But, you know, I have had folks say, hey, can you give my son or daughter a lesson or two? And you know, my answer is always I can get them started. But, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't read very well. I'm not going to be able to get them to that next level. But oftentimes it's really just, you know, you have some people that are just like, some of the best lessons I've ever given is, have you heard this record? You know what I mean? Like, if you listen to this record, it's going to connect a lot of dots for you. So how much of that do you get to do, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I find that that's very important. And again, I go back to my experience with taking lessons, and so much of have shaped me of doing what you just said, either finding this record on my own or somebody else telling me about it or my teacher. So that's all the stuff that's in the forefront of my mind when I teach. It's, okay, if you want to really get your independence together, this is the great tried and true way to do that. But again, thinking, what do you want to do with that? And so if I can turn my students on to this great record or check out this player, I do that regularly with my students. Just for inspiration, but also it can totally lead them down a different path. Like, absolutely, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just think back to, you know, all the stuff I didn't know when I was a 13-year-old that got my first drum set. you know, and like it took me years to discover Tony Williams, for example, or Max Roach, or, you know, any of that stuff, because I just wasn't into that music, you know, like when you look beyond the world you live in, and you start understanding all these more amazing things that are out there, and you start weaving that all together, that's when you really start learning the instrument, in my opinion.
Sure, yeah, and having that wide range of knowledge of this instrument or just music in general makes you a better player overall. And one of the things that I found as, you know, having my own teacher, putting my trust that my teacher is going to guide me and him turning me on to these different things, even if, like you, I wasn't that interested in, say, jazz as a young, snotty kid, having that trust in my, to just listen to your teacher because they know what they're talking about, you know, as I grew, the seed sown about that years later helped me, and it made you just be open to learning different styles and stuff like that. So I that's something I think about as a teacher also.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, you know, and we kind of glossed this over, you know, kind of at the outset of our conversation, but I didn't ask, but who are some of those seminal influences for you as a drummer? You know, what were you listening to growing up, and you know, who are the guys and girls that really did it for you as drummers?
Well, yeah, even before I started playing the drums, my parents had music on all the time. So they had the classic rock and the pop of the day. So even before I started playing the drums, I was aware of Simon and Garfunkel, AC/DC, stuff like that. But eventually growing up as a kid, you start to have your own music. So I remember listening to the 80s metal bands, Queensryche, Metallica, even Aerosmith, all those bands. And that's where I first started from. Those were the drummers that I wanted to be like.
Yeah.
But because of those seeds planted, I was always open to different styles of music. And so when my teacher would turn me on to different funk and R&B stuff, you know, my mind was open, and they'd go through those songs and start learning. So my palate started to be expanded to not just rock and heavy metal, but R&B and funk and blues. And, you know, so it's kind of all over the place, but that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Having a good, wide, eclectic, you know, I guess toolbox to pull from helps everybody, you know, and I just, you know, so many, I gotta be careful how I say this, 'cause I don't want to make anybody mad, but there's a lot of folks that are, you know, that put labels on themselves. I'm a rock drummer, or I'm a country drummer, or I'm a blues drummer. It's all a big mishmash at the end of the day, right? And, you know, if you're a drummer, you're a drummer, you know. And I say all the time about myself, you don't want to hear me play jazz. I promise you don't want to hear that. That doesn't mean I don't like it or love it even, you know. It's just not something that I do well. But when we remove those labels, that's when we really grow as musicians. So how do you approach teaching, you know, different genres and different styles to your students? Do you teach everything and encourage people to get out of their comfort zone? I'm sure you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I kind of try to sneak it in. So if I have a student that only loves, say, heavy metal, like I did when I first started, I want to help them reach their goals. Like I said, they love these bands. Let's learn all about these bands. But one way that I can sneak it in is to show them how these bands were influenced by this other genre that came before, or to just show that, you know, new metal would have never happened unless this other style of music happened, and how, you know, to draw a line from there, and then just kind of try to open their minds up to different genres, different styles, to even just be open about it. And even if at that day, a seed is planted, and they still don't like that other styles. At least now they're aware of it, and they're aware a little more of the history of their favorite bands came directly from this other band or this other style. And as we continue, I find that they start to become more open, because when they've kind of mastered the genre that they love, or I shouldn't say mastered, but when they can play their favorite song, then we can start to expand from there and talk about, you know, ghost notes and funk music and, you know, the different styles or the different techniques it takes to play specific styles. But, you know, ultimately, I want to help a student with their dreams and goals. I don't want to impose mine on them, but to open their eyes to see the landscape is very helpful.
Yeah, man. That's, and I think that's where the real progress is made in musicians. You know, I recall, you know, talking to the great Donnie Wynn on this show. And, you know, of course, Donnie played with Robert Palmer for many years, and then he toured with Brooks and Dunn, you know? So, I mean, that's a pretty wide range. But Donnie said, you know, I would be on tour with Brooks and Dunn, and I'm sitting backstage listening to Pantera, you know? So, so that's where the real progress is made, is when you get outside of what you do every day, I suppose.
True, exactly, yeah. Especially after you've been playing drums a while, you know, and you've been in a rock band and you feel like you can play rock pretty well, to also start to feel those same feelings about a different style that you don't play well or are less familiar with, you know, almost kind of like you're starting over, rather than feel like I pretty much got the rock thing down. It can help to keep you going, and it can help your rock brand.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, I just think that's such a great point, you know, and so important for the development of any musician, whether it's a drummer, a trumpet player, it doesn't matter. Get out of your comfort zone, and it's only going to help you in your playing. So to switch gears just a little bit, so I know that you have a full slate of students. You're always teaching. You teach pretty much 7 days a week. What do you do outside of your teaching practice? You know, and look, I know we're in the middle of the COVID pandemic, and there's no gigs in LA right now. But, you know, are you still, you know, doing recording sessions? Are you still going out and playing gigs, or have you really focused in on the teaching thing?
Well, I've always, I am focused in on the teaching, but I always, you know, I'm a player as well as a teacher, and I think that's one of my strengths as a teacher, that I'm still doing the things that I'm teaching or still doing the things that my students want to eventually do. I just finished up an album, an EP with a band here locally. The playing gigs are too far between now with this COVID. I'm waiting for them to come back. But I just booked a gig here in the later part of the year that I'm looking forward to. And so, yeah, I'm still active. When I'm not teaching, I'm trying to play. And when I'm not playing or teaching, I'm practicing as much as I could to improve my own drumming, definitely.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, that brings up a good question. You know, what are you working on these days? I mean, is it odd time? Is it, you know, phrasing? I mean, what do you work on in a given day of practice for you?
Excellent question. And this is one of the things that I go through with my students, and each student is different depending on where they are and where they want to go. For me, I always focus on the fundamentals. You know, in terms of being a professional musician, I definitely always want to keep sharp on the fundamentals and also get better, meaning my sense of time, my sense of groove, my sense of control dynamically and time-wise. So those are little sections of things that I focus on and have exercises that I'm working towards for the fundamentals. And then on top of that is certain things that I'd like to expand upon, like linear drumming, working on that, working on some odd time stuff. And then oddly enough, with my advanced students, the things that they want to learn kind of show me, oh yeah, I need to I need to brush up on that a little to, in order to teach it well. So yeah. That's another part of what I'm doing. On top of, like I said, anything that might come my way from gigs and having to learn songs and stuff like that. So yeah, same thing as I do for my students. We figure out a plan for your practice time.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I know that's kind of a big thing. You know, I mean, we just had Benny Greb on. You know, he's got a new book out, you know, Effective Practicing for Musicians. And I know that you've written about your philosophies for effective practicing and all of those things. Is there something that you would say to our listeners, you know, here's what you need to do to make your practice routine better?
Well, one of the big ones, or maybe I shouldn't say big ones, but one of the things that I've encountered with my students in discussing an effective practice routine and some of the things I've written about on my blog and whatnot about making your time efficient and whatnot. But one of the things that has popped up with both young kids and adults is the cooperation of the people around you, whether it be a spouse or if you're young, your parents, with the understanding that, especially with drums, you know, well, now you can get electronic drums and you can get mesh heads, but traditionally drums are a louder instrument. And so in digging deeper with some of my students, I found that if you don't have the cooperation of the other people in the house, it can make practicing your instrument a challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, if your parents don't want to hear you play, then you're not going to get a lot of practicing time in. And so part of that is including them and letting them know that playing this instrument is important to you and you know, discussing when maybe if there are certain times that you can practice where you don't bother them or, you know, especially with adults who have adult responsibilities and full-time jobs and spouses. So that's a part of not only structuring a practice plan to practice consistently, but also getting other people on board also.
Yeah, man, that's a good point. And, you know, every time I think about that, I go back to, you know, how grateful and thankful I am to, you know, my mom, my neighbors when I was growing up, because there was really nothing that was off limits to me personally. You know, it was if you want to play, play. And nobody really ever complained. And I'm grateful for that. And, you know, I'm grateful that I didn't grow up in an apartment, you know, with, you know, 75 neighbors around me, where that is a challenge. So,
yeah.
And you know, I agree, you know, drumming, a lot of people see you carrying a drum set into your house and they're like, oh crap.
Right. Exactly. Amen.
You know, so
parents.
Yeah. So I just think back how grateful I was, but that's a great point, man. So what are your goals, you know, over the next, I put a time limit on it, I suppose, but do you, you know, are you continuing to grow your teaching practice? I know you are, but what are the goals for you over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, things like that?
Well, through the pandemic and converting to teaching people online, and, you know, as soon as everything clears up, I definitely want to have students back in person at the studio, but it's shown me that, you know, whatever challenges that come up with teaching online can be dealt with. And so you can have a good lesson online just as you can with in person. It's just a little different. And definitely seeing what other people have taken it with online schools per se or correspondence lessons. I definitely would like to grow my teaching studio to include those. And, I've done group lessons in the past. I'd like to eventually bring some of those back to just grow and scale the teaching studio to that. So that's kind of where I'm headed down a little right now, because at some point, you know, I have to sleep and eat. So, you know, I can't teach, you know, 200 hours in the week. So by doing that, there's a way to teach even more students. So that's kind of what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah. Well, that's very true. We all just have, you know, a finite amount of time, and, You know, how do you want to spend that time? And, you know, here's the other thing, you know, when you're teaching at a level like you are, you know, there has to be, you know, practice time for you and God, just quiet time, right? I mean, how do you balance that? I mean, do you, you know, sculpt out a few hours every week where it's just quiet?
I do. And again, this goes back to the conversations I have with my students about finding time to practice. With a full schedule, I try to write down what I do, even down to the every hour. What am I doing at 7 or 8 or 9 to see when it would be most effective for me to find practice time or to even just take the time to grow the business? And when can I, practice, when can I learn songs for this gig coming up, or even personal time? I'm married. I recently got married. Well, not recently, a couple of years ago. But so that's important to me, to really try and balance my work schedule and my personal life. So, yeah, I do that. And what I find for practicing is I'm just getting up earlier in the day, and I take my practice pad to the bathroom where it's away from people and not going to bother people, and I'm getting my practice in early in the morning.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good point. And, you know, congratulations on the marriage. There's nothing better than a great marriage, and I speak from experience there. So, being a musician, if your life partner is not into you being a musician, it's never going to work. You know, so I tell everybody, if you're a musician and you're married or you're in a committed relationship, that person is also going to be a musician, whether they play or not. So, yeah. You know, because we all live it, right? I mean, we really do, right? You know, so, well, Stefano, I mean, I can't thank you enough. You've been such a partner and friend of the show, you know, over the last couple of years. You know, we have corresponded back and forth many times. I just really thank you. And I know on your blog, you've mentioned the Drum Shuffle as, you know, a podcast that drummers should listen to. I thank you so much for that. We just honored to have you on, but we're going to send some folks your way. It's drumlessonsinla.com is the website. We're going to send some folks your way. And as we wrap up, you know, I know you've got to get started with your teaching day here in a minute, but, you know, I preface all that to say, give us all a good piece of advice. You know, you've been doing this for a long time. What is the one thing that you would share with everybody to say this is a key piece of advice for you in your drumming or your musical journey?
Well, first off, let me say thank you, Jamie. It's an honor to be here and talking to you. I'm a big fan of the show. I love what you're doing for the drumming community. You've had so many great guests on, so thank you, first of all. And now, my piece of advice. Man, it would have to be enjoy the journey. I mean, the music business can be tough, or even just learning an instrument can be frustrating, especially now if you put yourself online. You're going to get some haters, but overall, if you just try to connect with what made you want to play in the first place and that feeling you've had, first of all, it's easy to lose that with everything going on. So I guess that would be it. And enjoy that journey.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I think that's great advice. And I think so many people get caught up in not enjoying it. You know, they're just miserable. They're frustrated, and they don't know how to have that outlet anymore. But that's really good advice, man. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. Well, Stefano, again, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you coming on the show. We've got to have you back. You know, when we get through the through the pandemic and the lockdowns and all that stuff, you know, we'll have to do this again. And maybe we can pick, you know, something that you're working on with your students and, you know, do a whole episode on that one particular thing. I think that would be cool and useful. And the invitation is open to come back and do that anytime you have the time, brother.
Thank you, Jamie. I appreciate it. That would be great. Anytime.
All right, man. Well, listen, we'll talk to you real soon. Again, thanks for the time, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you. Take care, Jamie.
All right, see you, man. All right, guys and girls, that is going to wrap up episode number 125 of the Drum Shuffle podcast. As always, thanks to Stefano for taking time out of his busy schedule to come on the show. And again, as always, thanks to each and every one of you for listening to the show. We simply cannot do this without each and every one of you listening to the Drum Shuffle week in and week out. As always, I'm going to ask you to hit the subscribe button on whatever platform you use to listen into the show. I'm also going to ask you to share a link with a friend. That is what helps us the most. And again, I want to offer my apologies for being a little hit or miss on the weekly schedule here. Just a lot of stuff going on. Everything is fine, so no worries there. But I am back to the day job in the office every day of every week. So a little bit hard scheduling stuff. And quite honestly, a lot of drummers don't have a whole lot going on right now due to COVID. And they want to come on and talk about stuff that they're doing. And the lack of doing sometimes prevents me from having an interview every single week. So please bear with us. We are working through it. And the goal, of course, is to get back on that regular weekly schedule as soon as possible. So again, thanks for your patience and thank you for listening. I simply don't have the words to thank you guys enough for tuning in. So until next time, may your head stay strong and your sticks never break. Cheers, everybody.